Song of the Silencer by Brian Aldiss. Noon of a summer day in a high latitude. Splendor from every corner of the city, and the squalid made splendid. Jubilation locally, celebration all round the planet, rejoicing throughout the solar system. The day of all days had come, the day of the ultimate machine. Not on Earth alone did hooters wail and bells chime. On the planets and the satellites and asteroids of the system, wherever mankind had found a foothold, there also was a spirit of sober joy at the thought that Utopia had come at last, and come undoubtedly to stay. From further afield, by space warp and black hole, travelled mutated members of the human family who had forged away into distant stellar systems. These distant cousins also returned to Earth or Moon to be present at the scintillating birth of a new era for all mankind. Reproduced everywhere, in the great 4D cubes in public places or flat, on-arm sets, were shots of the superb, the colossal, ultimate machine itself, as it was in space, awaiting activation this very day of days. It was popularly known as the ultimate machine. So spoke the media. Its official designation was MOSRAB, but of this acronym, standing for Metafunctional Orbital Self-Positing Replication Anthropoid Brain, the first and the last words only caught in the general fancy. Metafunctional brain was the term frequently on the lips of the citizens of Moskarik, Parandam, Chicholo, and other vast metropolises. Unfortunately, not all those citizens were capable of experiencing the same delight in this technological triumph as was felt by their leaders and advisers. A vanishingly small percentage, perhaps no more than a few hundred thousand desperados round the whole system, opposed the event about to be celebrated, the activation of the ultimate machine. A terrorist organization known as the Enemies of Knowledge survived in the gutters and wastes, dedicating their perverted energies to destroying the ultimate machine. The central event of this millennial day was to be the pressing of the key by the interplanetary president, which would activate MOSRAB, and so change the course of human affairs for all time. This crucial key, with all the age-old symbolism attached to it, formed part of a terminal console on Earth, linked by SUHF and PCM to the brain in space, and was housed in the Palace of the Planets. For financial reasons, large structures like the Palace were nowadays generally situated in space, in a suitable energy-stable orbit. The Palace of the Planets was the largest building on Earth. Already men and women and children in their millions were flocking to it, on foot or in private corpse sport. Orderly though the crowds were, militiamen were everywhere. Only a minute section of that concourse saw a brief scuffle involving uniformed men with Immobilan guns. The gunman ran after a black-clad youth, pursued him into one of the foyers of the subterraway, and shot him. Half an hour later, the youth landed in an interrogation room. He lay in one corner where he had been dropped, a sardonic expression on his face. His spine curved backwards like a bow, so that only his heels and the crown of his head touched the floor. Visible effects of the Immobilan drug were much like those of an extinct disease called tetanus. The militia had only to key their terminal for the solar computer, which stored complete biographies of the billions of billions of inhabitants of the system, to display appropriate data. This youth was Ben Michael Arraz, born Kubir City, North Quadrant, Titan, 2015. A 3-year criminal record of sabotage with the Enemies of Knowledge. judicious administration of the antidote to Immobilan was in itself enough to extract information from Arras. The EK were in the course of executing two plans to disrupt the great achievement about to be consolidated. Locally, one of their most notorious assassins, a young woman by the name of Gertide Seribu Chia, would assassinate the interplanetary president just before he depressed the crucial key, while from a secret launching site on Luna, a kamikaze strike would be launched against the ultimate machine itself. Arras was given an immediate automated trial and found guilty by the computer on 38 of 39 indictments. Before he was destructed, one more item of information was extracted from him. The insane fanaticism of the EK group was inspired in part by the intellectual teachings of one Ambrose Pablo, an ex-member of the system-wide Practical Philosophers Panel. The PPP had been founded, as an enlightened move, by the first interplanetary president some 26 years ago. The PPP had infused superior wisdom into the hard governmental thinking of solar system politics. Indeed, one of the PPP's earliest proposals had been for the establishment of an independent source of wisdom to steer large issues of a philosophical nature touching the welfare of humanity as a whole. From this proposal had sprung the project of constructing an analogue of a human brain, as opposed to a mere computing machine, which had accumulated in Mossrap. The leading high philosopher, Ambrose Pablo, had opposed this grandiose scheme from the start. Despite the warnings of friends, he had insisted on voicing his reservations publicly. 2 years ago, when Mossrap was nearing completion, it was found necessary to withdraw the high philosopher from office in the interests of public confidence. He was at present incarcerated in one of the luxury confinement satellites in the so-called ZPs, or zodiacal planets, stabilized in a cislunar orbit. The militia chief communicated his new findings to interested parties for immediate action, and decided himself to pay a visit to the high philosopher. The journey took only a few light seconds. "Pray come in, gentlemen," said high philosopher Ambrose Pablo. He stood back to allow the chief and his two escorting officers to enter the low room. "I trust you have no trouble on your hands on this joyful day of all days." He looked at them alertly, taking in their drab uniforms and beefy faces.
"We're expecting you to give us a few details of your opposition to the ultimate machine," said the chief.
The philosopher's irony was lost on him, as well it might be, for the video screens in the room were flooded with images of serious and glorious matters. Space itself, with the great irregular shape of the metafunctional brain, and a view of the swelling congregation in the vast hall down on Earth. Small peripheral screens reinforced the general grandeur. The high philosopher was a tall, willowy man with a gaunt but lively face, a streamer of expressions fluttering in the wind, as it had once been poetically described by Pablo's dead mistress. White hair and long, articulate hands. He looked in many ways a typical ectomorph. On the Sheldonian scale he scored 127. He was a man whose nervous system was near the surface, and he glanced at the chief's helmet and held his tongue. For the chief wore a red-striped comm hat, a reinforced metal transmitter that beamed whatever the chief saw and heard straight back to a subterranean headquarters on Earth. The chief was a mesomorph, with enough of the endomorph to render him genial, when the occasion demanded. His comrades were standard mesomorphs, with thick necks and big hands dangling at the ends of their uniformed arms.
"What precisely are your objections to the machine?" asked the chief, after a silence.
"Well, you may recall, I'm sure you have such matters at your fingertips, that I published a volume a few years ago entitled The Song of the Silencer, in which I set out..."
"Precisely, Pablo, please."
"I was not deviating from the question. You asked for my reservations. I have but one, yet it may strike you as complex. On the other hand, there is another reservation, not mine, but one registered by numerous technocrats and thinkers, which I can state succinctly in a three-word slogan which your people have done their best to suppress. Mosrab never sleeps.
Let's have that one first, then, said the chief.
He sat down, motioning the philosopher to do the same.
And be quick about it. We're determined to wipe out the EK, so I need to know what you know, and I can't spend all day on it.
The day may indeed be shorter than you imagine. The philosopher sat down on the arm of a sofa, crossing his long legs. That slogan, Mosrab never sleeps, means precisely what it says. The metafunctional brain is constructed as a replica of the human brain. Its original architects designed it to function as a human brain functions, insofar as that is possible. Political pressure has swept away that consideration. For think, to be cost-effective, the Mosrab has been built in orbit, although it is designed to experience the circadian rhythm of the 24-hour day, as does every living thing on Earth. But its costs are met by taxation from all sources in the system. Communities on the most distant bodies, on the moon of Pluto, have contributed to the financing of this project. So, they rightly claim an allocation of its real time when it is functional. To meet that enormous demand, the Mosrab must now work continually. No sleep periods, ever.
That's logic, said the chief. You don't suggest we should shut the machine down for 9 hours of every 24, a mechanical thing getting its shut-eye?
He laughed curtly. The philosopher rose and paced up and down before the screens, his silhouette continually occulting the multicoloured hemispheres of the ultimate machine. Chief, you bring me almost to my own reservation about this miraculous, for it is nothing less, instrument. The reservation for which I was dismissed from office. Will you please try and understand me if I speak my mind, for believe me, I have much sympathy with your wish to serve the system's government, and with that government's wish to serve Mosrab. I recognize that your intentions, and the intentions of the government, are good. That you have become tainted by power is inescapable. Such is human nature. Power warps imagination.
Cut the verbosity.
That is my endeavour. I'm nervous, can't you see? He exhibited his hands, which he'd been clasping and unclasping. I believe that this is a day of doom, to what extent no man can determine, for the human race. The death of its aspirations, and not their fulfilment. You see, although your intentions may be well enough, your basic assumptions are totally incorrect. He lifted a hand commandingly to silence the militia chief. Take this question of sleep. You think mechanically your attitude to life is exploitive, as it is in all who seek power. You view hours spent sleeping as mere wastage. That is mistaken. Sleep, the balm of hurt minds, in Shakespeare's fine phrase, is a reservoir of new life and insight in which we need to bathe our psyches every day. In sleep, we commune with our deeper selves, with a permanent part of ourselves which is beyond fear or ambition or envy. Even the vilest bully and torturer in your employ, even a Genghis Khan or a Joseph Stalin, escapes his terrible appointed role for a third of his life. All positive things arise from sleep, and the oases of sleep we call dreams. Deprive a man of sleep, your inquisitors will tell you, sir, and he suffers from hallucinations within 3 days and becomes mad after 10. Yet, Mosrab, the replication of a human brain on whose sanity the system must soon depend, is sentenced to chronic insomnia. It cannot rest or gain insight or recuperate. I would think that is a formidable enough reservation for anyone. Yet it has been set aside in the interests of democracy and revenue. While he spoke, The events, as depicted on the screens behind his slender back, were going forward. The greatest moment was not far away. The ultimate machine rode in a lunar orbit, a quarter of a million miles from Earth. It was as large as the moon, although its mass was less. The elements and energies used in its construction had been found by the cannibalization of Uranus. It gleamed in the eternal energy output of the sun, half in light, half in shadow. So greatly had it influenced the minds of men that the entire surface of cladding, which shielded the artificial brain within, had been decorated. Decorated in a thousand ways, according to the desires of the communities who had played their part. Among many abstract panels were representational views of terrestrial landscapes, reproductions of Rembrandt canvases 10 miles high, Chinese poems with characters larger than whales, and many other brilliant inspirations, which indicated how fully this space-born Leviathan bore the hopes of mankind. From a certain distance, the vast artifact resembled a randomly tattooed human face. Gathering round it like sprats, like whole shoals and fleets of sprats, were countless police and pleasure craft, moving as near as permitted to gain a close-up view of this innovation at such an inspiring moment. The militia chief, failing to concentrate on what the high philosopher was saying, scrutinized the craft like a hawk. Something in his helmet checked them off for him. He responded into a throat mic. Among the multitudinous space vehicles lurked the enemy, the kamikaze vessel operated by the EK. A signal came through the helmet. The space militia had identified it. With a grunt of triumph, the chief ran forward and altered the magnification of the philosopher's main screen. The viewpoint, from being distant, rushed in on the target, so that ships seemed to scatter from all sides of the vision. Now only a few craft could be seen, the magnification making them appear as if made of wool. One was a bright yellow, sharp-edged against an enormous bas-relief of Eva Peron's face. Its hull became blackened. It glowed momentarily, then disintegrated like a spent firework. The space militia had got their man. The chief's two beefy escorts cheered. While the chief communicated with his helmet, High Philosopher Pablo went to stare moodily at another screen. It showed a scene almost as spectacular as the view of space, for the Palace of the Planets was covered down the full length of its facade with banners and flowers. Slowly, impressively, the viewpoint swung in under the high central archway, moved into the great auditorium, over the heads of the multitude, to focus on the podium and the figure, as yet minute in the distance, of the grey-haired interplanetary president of the United Solar System. As if sight of that figure spurred him to talk, the philosopher said, "Yes, the Song of the Silencer. That's the man, your beloved president, who banned my book and had me confined here like Ariel pent in an oak. I believe he genuinely could not understand the explanation I gave him of the dangers that Mustrad represents. Some men must always destroy what they do not understand. He could not understand the true nature and function of the human brain. Few can. We think, yes, cogitamus ergo sumus. But as yet, Homo sapiens is too immature to understand what thought is. We think, but cannot think about thought. In much the same function, our ancestors sailed the oceans of the round globe, believing it flat. Mustrad has been built as a perfect model of the brain, yet with complete misunderstanding of the nature of both brain and universe." The chief had finished communicating with an unseen ally. He turned to his escort and said, "They've discovered that Cerebu Chia is somewhere in the auditorium, armed to assassinate the president. They've got her Alpha Omega graph in the scanner. so we should have her any moment. He turned to the philosopher to cut him off, but something the president was saying made him hesitate and listen. This is the moment in history which will make all history until today seem like prehistory, declared the president to the multitudes. He was a large, solid man with a thick neck and heavy, folded jowls, yet with a touch of what men term nobility in his carriage. A typical mesomorph, with more than a touch of ectomorph in his makeup. The brain of Homo sapiens, the improved cerebrum, is the instrument which has brought man in such a brief time from the status of just another ape to his present condition, where he can look upon the universe and not be dismayed. And not comprehend what he sees, interjected the philosopher. Yet, as we know, that brain has led mankind into a long history of war and cruelty and strife. When I press the key of this console before me, that bloodthirsty story will cease. We shall have the power of pure thought, the thought of the metafunctional brain, to guide us. An exponential increase in knowledge will cloak us. The philosopher gave a sob, pressing a long hand to his throat. It's not knowledge we lack. We have the knowledge, you cacistocrat, more than we can deploy. What we need is the dream qualities, wisdom and imagination. The imagination that can make knowledge effective for good. The image of the man on the screen raised a finger just above the level of its skull. Mankind's adolescence, the long age of confusion, is over. This justly named ultimate machine marks the point where history, religion and politics, yes, and art, all converge. But it's a mistake, cried the philosopher. He turned beseechingly to the militia chief, whose eyes were searching the crowded levels of the auditorium. He subscribes to the orthodox thinking, the politically correct line, that the human brain originates thought. How can that be so for 1 minute? The thought we experience, the thoughts that guide migratory birds, the thoughts that tell the lowliest flower when to blossom, the microorganism when to divide, they come from without, from the universe.
The universe thinks? Asked the chief.
Yes, yes. We are all one of God's thoughts, or the universe's, as every dolt knows who ever paid attention to his dreaming self. But the president on distant earth continued in even tones, surrounded by the presidents and chairmen and advisers from many worlds and satellites. My friends, you know that human lives for many centuries, and especially for the last 3 centuries, have been marred by a great war between religion and politics and science. They are 3 of the great constants that demarcate the boundaries of the modern human situation. In Masrab, they become 1. We cannot deny that the ultimate machine has a godlike power, or that it in future will resolve our destinies. We shall, for the first time since the cerebrum drove us from the dim comfort of the Pleistocene jungles, become at 1 with the universe. The philosopher clutched at his narrow skull. That's precisely what we will not become, you deluded man. Such hubris! You know nothing. We are about to be isolated from the universe. With a sigh, he turned to the chief. Sir, understand. Stop this grotesque performance. Phone through and stop it. Say there's been a technical hitch. Listen. The brain does not originate thought. It is a sensor, the world's best silencer. That's what I said. That's why they banned my book, why I was expelled from office. The universe booms and echoes with thought. Radiation, it's called, so loud, no one could cope with it. Mankind has gained supremacy because our brains act as baffles, suppressors, admitting only a trickle of that great sound.
The thoughts, of which we are so overweeningly proud, are really snatches of the universal song at a volume we can tolerate.
He grasped the chief's shoulder to make him listen. But the chief's eyes were darting over the screen as he called to Bass.
Yes. Yes, great. Keep tracking. Yes, wait, yes. I have her now.
He threw himself forward, twisting the controls. One of the topmost galleries came into focus. From the back row of seats, a black-clad girl rose and aimed a shoulder missile at the distant figure standing on the podium.
Oh, shoot, Gertheid, shoot! For the love of humanity, shoot!
Cried the philosopher. Calmly, the voice of the interplanetary president continued, As we have always dreamed of God in our different races and creeds, so at last, through the power of science and politics working in unison, we have been able to invent him. The guidance we have forever sought is at hand. We have merely to listen in humility when I have pressed this switch. The damned thing orbiting out there is a monster silencer, not the voice of God, shouted the philosopher. Gertheid, shoo! He subsided as one of the escort men caught him behind the ear with a row of knuckles. This simple plastic key before me, continued the calm voice of the president, reaching out his hand. Under the chief's hand, the screen zoomed in on the black-clad girl as she squinted down her sights. The crucial key was depressed beneath the president's finger. Along the equator of the ultimate machine, lights fluoresced. The high philosopher pulled himself to his knees, to his feet, as the screens went berserk. The girl assassin was frozen with her weapon at her shoulder. The president stood oddly hunched over the console. The militia chief, his assistants, remained leaning forward, staring blankly at nothing. Over the great auditorium, stillness fell. Everyone was silent. The viewpoint settled on them. The high philosopher sank to his haunches. He glared ahead. Days passed, and hair sprouted from the unmoving viewers. Bony protuberances grew from their joints and foreheads. Weeks passed, and drifting dust settled on them. It was impossible to see that anyone stirred. Years passed. About the equator of the ultimate machine, lights glowed steadily, but still not a soul anywhere moved. The universe sang to them, sang sweetly, and in vain.